I'd like to call the Ohio Redistricting Commission to order. Would the staff please call the roll?
Speaker Co-Chair Cupp.
Present.
Senator Co-Chair Sykes.
Present.
Governor DeWine.
Here.
Auditor Faber.
Yes.
President Huffman.
Here.
Secretary LaRose.
Here.
And Leader Russo. Mr. Co-Chair, all members are present.
All present. Our quorum is established and will meet as full commission. The minutes are in the folders. Are there any discussion about the minutes, any additions?
I'll move the minutes be approved.
Second. Are there any changes or any further discussion about the minutes? Any objections to the minutes? Seeing and hearing none, we will accept the minutes as presented. Is there any further business to be brought before the commission today? We have discussed finalizing a schedule for meetings for the next few days. We have two versions of the schedule that's been distributed. Let's have some discussion about the schedule. Yes.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, since you asked,
yes.
And I, as I mentioned, I
didn't mean for you to ask.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. It's about 10 years of that we've been doing this, right, back and forth. Well, what I was going to say, Mr. Co-Chair, is, and as I mentioned, I'm available with the exception of an event this afternoon, which obviously won't conflict on the State of the State the other days. I'm not sure if there's value in the Thursday meeting. If we're, as I understand it, there are two new individuals involved are going to be here tomorrow evening. And we're going to have discussion over parameters of various kinds. If they're going to be able to make any kind of significant report on Thursday, you know, you had mentioned just before the meeting, virtual meetings, which I'm fine with. But and I know Auditor Faber had brought that up a couple of meetings ago. So that's generally what I would suggest. That we not have a meeting Thursday, or if we do, we have it earlier in the day. I think that we had suggested 1 o'clock versus 4 o'clock. That way, there can be go back to your hometown and take care of the things you got to take care of in your hometown on Thursday. Come back on Friday.
Okay.
Those would be my that's my input, but obviously go with the will of the group.
Additional comments? Leader Russo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm flexible, I think, on Thursday. I do think that it's important that we meet every day. I think that the virtual option, if we consider that and put that back on the table, I think makes much of this daily schedule probably more doable for many of us, and a little bit more flexible with some of the times, but also I think gives us some good ability in terms of having a more dynamic interaction with the map makers as well as a commission as a whole.
Additional comments? Well, let's look at the schedule itself and the two versions. Wednesday is the same. On Thursday, we have a difference, 1 o'clock being proposed as opposed to 4 o'clock. And the rationale for the 4 o'clock is that to allow more time? That's all right. Okay. Okay.
Maybe we should identify which schedule we're looking at and working from. That
yes.
might be helpful.
Okay.
There's one that has the heading, the Ohio Redistricting Commission And maybe we could work off of that one and see if there's any changes to that one, would be my suggestion. Okay. And I am available at any of those times.
Are there any objections to 1 o'clock on Thursday? Yes.
My only concern about 1 o'clock, I think, you know, recognizing what Senator Huffman, President Huffman has said, is that, you know, 1 o'clock, I think 4 o'clock, 1 o'clock doesn't give the mapmakers as much time once they arrive on Wednesday to be able to, and get some of our input Wednesday evening, maybe to have made as much progress by 1 o'clock. I think 4 o'clock is probably that additional 3 hours will be more fruitful. That said, again, you know, recognizing some of the concerns of some of the commission members who maybe want to go back to their districts, if there is a virtual option, I think that may make that more doable.
Yes.
As far as Thursday, the later Thursday is better for me.
Seven o'clock. It's been a suggestion to say it's 7 o'clock. That will give them more time, in fact, and availability may be even more open. So 7 o'clock.
Can I make a suggestion, maybe that compromises on Thursday between not having it and just scheduling it right now as an as needed, and then we can decide on Wednesday. I also would suggest, following up on the co-chair's suggestion and to my suggestion earlier in the week, that if we can get the virtual technology in place, again, I have no idea what Cap Square and or OGT can do virtually. I would imagine it's doable because, again, I've done virtual meetings out of my office with many more people. The technology in this building is different, however. That the Thursday evening might be a good virtual meeting to have with our map drawers to see their first cut for Franklin County or Cuyahoga County or whatever they're working on. I just think that wherever we're going to meet, once we start looking at maps, needs to be a place to where we all have individual screens and or have large screens for the room, if that's doable. I don't know what the technology is. I don't know who's taking over the technology for this commission. I presume it's the legislators and the legislative. I forget what the name of the entity that does legislative IT is, but they're very good. And I remember that from my days. LIS.
LIS.
And they're very good and have access to wonderful technology, and this building's usually not wanting in that capacity. But that might alleviate the need for us being physically present on Thursday, if Thursday's actually necessary, if they have something meaningful for us to review.
I would suggest that we try to keep our schedule, daily schedule. I think 7 o'clock would be a better time to allow more progress on map drawing. And I think the consideration for that meeting being possibly virtual, I think would address all the issues.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm going to make a motion that we schedule the Thursday meeting at 7 o'clock as needed at the call of the chairs. They probably would get input from the map makers as to whether there'd be significant need for that meeting with a virtual option if possible. As needed, if possible. How about that? One motion.
Second. All those in favor? Any discussion about the motion?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I just the friendly amendment to remove that as needed. I think, you know, we're at the point where we're less than a week away that these maps are due. Every single day will be needed. And that's my only concern about that motion. But otherwise, I'm fully supportive of potentially having a virtual option.
If you would consider that a friendly amendment. we always have the option to cancel.
Yeah, right. And if the map makers look at the two of you and say, we don't have anything to report, we're just learning the rules, and for all of us to assemble here. Again, you know, we're all on salary, so it's no extra charge for us all to be here. But Yeah, that's if that's what the co-chairs want to do, that's fine.
Okay, all right. Are there any objections to that motion? Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to be here Thursday at 7, but if it's virtual, then I should be able to find a way to make it work.
I think the motion would accommodate the virtual presentation. So,
yeah.
Okay. Any other objections? If not, then we will accept 7 o'clock being a virtual meeting on Friday. 2 o'clock or 10 a.m. was proposed by us on our side. Any discussion about Friday?
Mr. Co-Chair, I'd say if we are meeting at 7 o'clock on Thursday, 10 a.m. is probably not much time for any progress to be made by those who are drawing the map. So, so 2 o'clock was probably more realistic than 10.
Any additional comments?
Friday morning is better for me, but yeah.
Well, by then we should have the virtual down, so at least attendance could be by virtual. So if there's no objections, we'll go. With 2 o'clock. And then on Saturday, one time proposes at 4 p.m., the other is at 1. No problems. I guess giving more time, maybe the 4 p.m.? 4 p.m.? Okay. Seems we have consensus on 4 p.m., so now we
well,
have...
let's mark that. We have a consensus.
So we have approval of our schedule at this point, and we will work post-haste to make sure that we have the technology to do virtual meetings as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. We will send out an update. We'll publish an update on our website as well, so that everyone will know of our intended schedule. We'll move now to another item. We have mediator to make a decision on. There has been some names that have been circulated, and as well, the United States Court of Appeals, the Sixth District, the Chief Magistrate has in fact given approval to use the mediation component of the court, and we have some representatives here today to try to explain and make a presentation on the possible option. Can you come forward, please? Would you introduce yourselves?
Certainly. Good morning, everyone. My name is Kathy Geyer. I'm the Chief Circuit Mediator for the United States Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Scott Coburn, and I'm one of the staff mediators with the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Please, at your leisure, please give us a presentation.
Okay. So we are here as part of the Sixth Circuit under Chief Judge Jeff Sutton has given the approval basically to provide our services in whatever way the commission may find helpful. We have been one of the longest standing mediation programs in the United States. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary in our circuit program, and other circuits across the country have modeled theirs around the Sixth Circuit. We have Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Michigan in our jurisdiction, and we mediate about 600 cases a year, from any case type, fully counseled cases, typically bankruptcy, civil rights, employment discrimination, you name it. We have four circuit mediators, and we follow a facilitative model. We work with the courts and parties in whatever way is needed. We typically follow a process that is a staged process where there's pre-mediation communications, perspectives shared by the parties, and solutions generated. But I think the key for mediation is that the mediators are neutral third parties. We don't have any stake in the outcome. And our goal is, as mediators, is not to determine who's right or wrong. It's not to render a verdict or a judgment as a court or a jury would do. It's not to impose solutions on anyone. Many people say mediators manage the process and the parties manage the solutions. So that's one way to think of it. In terms of mediation, in this particular situation, the Ohio Mediation Act, I think, would provide good guidance. Mediation is a process where a mediator facilitates communication and negotiation among the parties to assist you in reaching a voluntary result. I think it's important to make that distinction about the parties. So in mediation under the Uniform Mediation Act, the parties are the individuals whose agreement is necessary to reach a resolution. There's also a defined term called non-party participants, and those are individuals who the parties may rely on to assist you. And I think it's important to make that distinction because in this situation, it does certainly seem like there are many non-party participants from whom you would be seeking advice and counsel and making decisions upon. And from the perspective of the mediators, it's always helpful to make sure that the parties are lockstep with whatever the non-party participants are suggesting or advising so that the mediators don't get too far down the road with a conversation with non-parties only to find out that the parties who are making the decision may or may not be in agreement with that conversation. Anything you'd like to add?
We see our primary role as problem solving with parties, and we're not solving the problem, it's you solving the problem. So we engage with the participants in order to determine what is the goal or what are the goals, what are the obstacles to getting there, and then in a process of guided conversation, back and forth, expressed sometimes emotional concerns, practical concerns, legal concerns, we navigate all of that water together in trying to find the right way to accomplish the goal. I think the advantage you have in this scenario, we work in litigation and often people are working at very opposite goals. Here, there's the advantage of everyone trying to get to a goal and it's a shared process. So that would seem to help guide the conversation forward pretty significantly because everybody's trying to get to the same place, it's just how we get there. In the mediation process, that's exactly what we work with, is how to get there.
We thought we'd tell you a little bit about ourselves. As I mentioned, I'm with the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Prior to that, I was a mediator for the Supreme Court of Ohio for 5.5 years, and not only mediated the cases for the Supreme Court, but also ran a program called the Government Conflict Resolution Services Program, which some of you may recall as the Government Assistance Program or GAP program. It started in 1991 by an agency called the Ohio Conflict Dispute Resolution and Conflict Management Program, and it was made up of a commission of 12 individuals from each of the three branches of government, and it was formed to help public officials resolve disputes between and among themselves. So we typically would mediate cases with county or local officials, but it is a program that was designed to recognize that you as public officials have, as part of your daily responsibilities, conflict is just a normal part of that. So the GCRS program, or the Government Conflict Resolution Program, was part of my responsibilities at Supreme Court of Ohio. Prior to that, I was in private practice with a Fortune 100 company, managing litigation and a litigator at a law firm.
And I've been a mediator for 17 years. I've been with the Sixth Circuit Mediation Office since 2020. Prior to that, I was a mediator with the Kentucky Court of Appeals for about 5 years, and prior to that, I was engaged in private practice, a lot of my practice in real estate, construction, banking, and business law.
We're happy to take any questions, if you have any, or engage in any conversation or discussion that you'd like.
One question I have is, how much does it cost to have your service?
We're on loan from the court. We're the best bargain you'll have.
Does that mean we don't have to pay you anything?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Other questions?
Mr. Co-Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question about the confidentiality in this process, and maybe it's because this is not an actual case in the court. Maybe you could help give us a little parameters of how that would work. Obviously, one concern this whole process has been anytime anybody says something to anybody else, it ends up in litigation. And so, what should we know about the confidentiality of this process?
Well, I think you'll be pleased to know that the Sunshine Laws apply in mediation, and we take those seriously. We do understand that with public bodies that there is it's important to both protect the confidentiality of mediation conversations, but to do so within the context of the laws that govern. So if there is if it is a public meeting, we don't have an ability to go around that. If it's necessary to have individual conversations or caucus conversations privately that doesn't constitute a public meeting, that's certainly very helpful in mediation to be able to have those kinds of conversations. Under the Uniform Mediation Act, there are three different kinds of privilege that apply, but that's in terms of testifying down the road at a proceeding. So the privilege is separate from the confidentiality.
And maybe you could discuss the privilege a little bit.
Sure.
Since this is a litigious process.
Okay. So privilege under the Ohio Uniform Mediation Act allows parties to refuse to disclose and to prevent others from disclosing mediation communications that occur during mediation. And that disclosure is a privilege against testifying in a future proceeding. And a proceeding could be a court hearing, it could be a legislative hearing, it could be a discovery down the road. The privilege does not prevent someone from posting on social media or talking with family or friends or, you know, talking in a restaurant with folks, but it's specifically a privilege against sharing mediation communication in a future proceeding. And mediation parties have the broadest privilege. Mediators also have a privilege, and mediators can prevent others from sharing mediation communications of the mediators. And the non-party participants can also prevent others from testifying about what the non-party participants say in a future proceeding. So the parties have the broadest privilege under Ohio's UMA.
Mr. Coach, I mean, in our current configuration here as a redistricting body, who would each of us be considered parties, and who would non-parties likely be?
From my understanding, each of the commission members has a decision-making authority, and so I think, you know, certainly that would be subject to conversation if anyone thinks otherwise, but from my understanding, each one of the commission members would be considered a party, a mediation party under the UMA.
And non-parties would be staff or interested groups or individuals that wish to influence the decision of the redistricting commission?
Right. Non-party participants might be the independent map makers that you bring in, or consultants that you might bring in. I think the question of whether staff constitute non-party participants is more of a question that maybe under the commentary of the UMA is up for grabs, but I would say that it would be like a law office. If a lawyer is consulting with a you know, an administrative professional or someone else in the law firm, that I think most might say that the attorney-client privilege would still apply to that. So I think that I think it would be important to just establish what the expectations are around everyone in terms of where does that privilege apply, who's the party, who's the non-party participant.
I think it would need to be, at the very outset, a period of time spent discussing process. Much of what we do is create environment, and the questions you're asking, I think, we would need to delve into and you know, flesh out and have a very clear plan on who's participating, how, and what opportunities there might need to be to have a private side confidential conversation in order to, you know, accurately express a concern, interest, need, something of that sort. So I think we would need to start out with that kind of process conversation and make sure we're very clear on, and make sure that we're very clear on the privilege and legal parameters.
Chairman. We are a partisan body. We are all elected individually in partisan elections. But in trying to make decisions, we need neutrality. We need nonpartisan mediators or mediation. And what is your experience on this? What's your reputation on the issue of neutrality and partisanship?
Mediators, by definition, are neutral third parties. So if we're not neutral, then we're not, you know, we're not competent to serve in the role. Our behavior is guided by the model standards of conduct for mediators adopted by the American Arbitration Association, American Bar Association, and neutrality, self-determination is all part of our responsibility. If there is a conflict of interest that we become aware of, we will share it with you, we will disclose that, and then it will be up to you to determine whether or not you wanted to waive that conflict of interest or whether you wanted to excuse us as the mediators.
Leader Russo.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question about, you know, how would this process begin? We're on a very tight time frame here, less than a week. We have some independent map makers coming in that I think will begin work at least initially tomorrow. So this is going to be very quick, very rapid. The role of a mediator, is this something that begins immediately? Just talk to me a little bit about how you envision this process working.
Sure. Thank you, Leader Russo. I think that's, I hate to give a maybe answer. It's a terrible lawyer answer. but it will depend on what's going to fit best here once you've gotten to the point where the commission feels like it needs to plug the mediators in, whether we plug in at a point that got some preliminary map identified and have identified some specific concerns and just want to address those concerns. You know, that would be one way to approach. You know, we've of course done mediations where it's a blank slate and we start from the very beginning and just guide the whole conversation. I don't know necessarily, because this is, you know, a fairly complex situation, that that's where you want to plug the mediator in. You know, from the very beginning, blank slate phase, it might make more sense to do so when you've started to identify some areas of conflict, and then that's where we come into the conversation.
Other questions?
Chairman.
Governor?
Well, first of all, thank you both for being here. Thank you for your willingness to do this. Thanks to Judge Sutton for offering you up to do this. So we appreciate it very much. This is different for us as it is different for you. And I want to maybe just kind of explore a couple things. I'm not sure I fully understood some of your some of the answers, and that's my fault, not yours. But we have numerous lawsuits that are swirling around, and there may be more, we don't know. But ultimately, there's only seven people, at least at this stage, that are making a decision. So I guess the way I look at it is we've got two independent map makers coming in. We've got each one of us has staff. We're used to working, legislators, governors are used to working through their staff, so that we're not always the direct participants, but yeah, people who, when you talk to them, are you're basically talking to the principal. But in some respects, this is just different, I think, than a normal case. But in other, it strikes me that in other ways, it is similar in that you have people with divergent views, maybe divergent interests, and you're trying to find, as the neutral party, third party, you're trying to find a place where everyone can settle. I guess I want to see if, is anything that I said disturbing to you or that you would disagree with as we all are kind of working our way through this? Because no one knows how this is going to work. Mm-hmm. But we ultimately, the goal is we've got the two map makers, we also have four partisan map makers. Republicans have two, Democrats have two, who also can be valuable as this discussion goes on. But ultimately, it's the people you see up here who are the principals, and it becomes even more complicated than I assume the normal civil case when you have two parties. Now you got seven. I know some cases you may have multiple parties, but so it's just unique. It's just different. But I think at least I'll speak for myself. I think that you can be very valuable in this exercise. So
there's nothing troubling about what you said. I think the challenge from my perspective in thinking about this is that typically you would want to have all of the parties in the room when there's decisions being made, and I don't think there's any delegation of decision making or a delegable duty here. So if each of the commission members is the only one who can make the decision, I think access to the decision makers would be the most important thing from the mediator's perspective, because of course we're used to working with others. Maybe it's if it's a structured settlement or bringing in an accountant or a specialist or subject matter expert or something like that, that's important. But if the decision makers are not available to reach, that would be, I think, a challenge, because as I mentioned, we might kind of get headed down a particular path only to find that one of you is not in agreement with that, and it's hard to weigh in on a decision that you weren't part of developing. So I think that would be, I think, what probably the challenge in terms of, I know that your schedules are all busy, and we'd want to make sure we have the right issues lined up. So we would typically meet with you individually with the parties and find out what is the most compelling or important issue to each one of you, and that may be different. And then we would set an agenda for that and say, these seem to be the five or three or six or 10 issues that are important that need to be resolved. And that list may not be the same from each of you, but we would want to establish an agenda and then get agreement on the agenda. If we address these issues, does that satisfy the commission? And do you feel like there's anything else that we would have to address in order for the commission to feel that you could make a decision?
Yeah, and none of that bothers me. Okay. The access, I think you will have access. I think that, as far as immediate access, sometimes that access will come through staff, but ultimately it's not staff who makes the decisions. We have to make those decisions. But you also have the other situation where, we've had three court decisions that we have to follow. We have a constitution that we have to follow. We all bring our own other interests into this. And then you have two new people are coming in Wednesday who are going to try to, at our direction, come up with something that everyone can agree on, or at least we can get enough votes to pass. So you got another group over here. So it's unique. It's a unique situation, but I still believe that your skill sets and your talents can be very helpful here.
And from a process perspective, getting back to Leader Rousseau's question, I think it would be helpful to have an individual conversation to get an idea where there's overlap and where there's not in terms of what's agreed upon and what's not. And that would give us a basis for kind of getting oriented to the framework, getting up to speed on the legal issues, constitutional issues, and then also the practical issues in the time frame that you need. And then I think once we have an initial conversation, we can suggest, you know, possible ways to use our services. Or, you know, we're kind of coming into a dispute that's been around for a while, so you may say, everything's going along fine. Oh, we had a snag. Let's use the mediators here to facilitate. This particular conversation is troublesome. Get over that hurdle, go along, and just kind of use us on an ad hoc basis. Really, I think the goal would be to be as flexible as possible so that, you know, this facilitates your resolution in a timely manner.
Well, I think if I could ask one more question, Mr. Chairman. I think it would be helpful for you to have discussions with the seven members one at a time and do that. And so I think that might give you a framework of where everybody's starting from. Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And so my experience in mediations in the past few decades, it's based on that. And of course, you know, the settlement discussions are not evidence in cases. We know that. And you talked a little bit about the privilege extending to the seven members of the commission. And there are, I guess, three groups of people that, besides the commission, the first four, if you will, are the four map makers who have been intimately involved in this for 6 or 8 months, and frankly, in my opinion, I think know more about this than anyone else. Those are individual, either employees or contract employees of different commission members. Are you telling me that the privilege would extend to them, much like it would be an accountant or an expert witness or a structured settlement analyst?
That would be my interpretation of 2710, yes.
Okay.
As non-party participants, they can refuse to disclose and prevent others from disclosing their own mediation communications, but they couldn't disclose the mediation communications of the parties. So as the parties, you would have the ability to not only prevent others from disclosing what you, any of your mediation communications, but you would also be able to prevent the non-party participants from disclosing mediation communications.
Okay, and the non-party participants' conversations with others can be disclosed if they talked to each other or some outside person who's otherwise not involved?
Well, since the privilege is just a privilege against disclosing in a future proceeding, then it wouldn't prevent any conversations outside of a proceeding. So they could go to lunch together and talk about it, but they couldn't be subpoenaed to testify.
Sure. And then the second group of people would be other staff that are regularly involved in this, attorneys or other folks. And I assume that's treated similarly to these four in-house map makers?
Yes.
Okay. And then the next group are the newly nearly newly hired map makers who are employees or contractors of the commission. And does the privilege apply to them in a similar fashion?
Yes, non-party participant privilege.
Okay. So I'd like to just read part of it from the Supreme Court's order and ask you to see how this lines up with the privileges that we just talked about. So the Supreme Court has ordered that the drafting shall occur in public. And does that affect in any way your ability to communicate? In other words, we have to do this, and I think all of us are struggling a little bit with exactly how that works. You know, the seven of us sitting here with a mouse moving it around like a Ouija board, you know, kind of thing, or exactly how that works. So can you just talk a little bit about how drafting shall occur in public lines up with these negotiations are not public or conversations, whatever they may be?
The most similar analogy, I would say, is when we mediate, when I used to mediate with public officials, and they were boards or commissions or agencies or you know, had multiple individuals, they would meet in an executive session to have conversations, but any kind of decision making that would be made in public. So there would be an opportunity through executive session to have conversations, but not any decision making. So if that seems like that is the starting point, at least, you know, off the top of my head on that, is that if there's going to be decision making, map making, drawing, that sounds like that's the expectation, is that happens in public.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the order, so.
But the conversations leading up to that map making or drawing wouldn't necessarily, at least as I understand what you just read, mean that every conversation that's ever had by anyone about this process is the same as the map making.
Okay. And if you haven't had a chance to look at the court's order, that would be helpful. Just make sure we're going down the right path, I would suggest. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Is there any additional questions or comments?
I would have one. Have you ever mediated a redistricting issue matter before?
No.
You're blessed. Any additional comments? Leader Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my other question would be to the two of you, and I'm not sure who would be available for mediation, but what is your availability throughout the rest of this process? The court has ordered us to complete this task by next Monday on the 28th.
Between the two of us, we have availability throughout. Scott has availability through the duration, and I have availability through Thursday at noon. I'm going to Europe in the afternoon, so but Scott will be available through as long as you need him.
Hearing and seeing no.
Yeah, I was just reminded here by counsel that he's wrote the privilege law regarding redistricting for the NCSL, National Conference of State Legislators. And he's suggesting that the federal law will trump the state law as it relates to privilege. And I guess that's a new twist for me. I would ask you that you get with all counsel, but particularly Mr. Stagari, who's kind of a national expert in terms of redistricting and advises state legislators and the NCSL on these things to see whether, in fact, the privilege that we're talking about is in place. And the answer is it may not be, and we have to go forward anyway, especially in light of the court's specific ruling. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it, and we'll get back with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
To the coach.
Is there any other mediators that we'd like to present at this particular time, or we're going to have a discussion about just the previous presentation.
I was just going to make a motion that we accept the generous offer of the Sixth Circuit to have them be our mediators and get this show on the road.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would say is I think we need to, the rules need to be clear that if in fact one of us sits down and says a whole variety of things to the mediator and we believe it's privileged, but in fact it's not, we should know that. So I think that needs to be, and that's, I know that's a rather complex legal question at this point, but that's, I think that's important.
We can be sure to do the legal research, so we'll have a memo on that. Any objections to the motion? Hearing seeing none, it is so ordered. Is there any further business to be brought before the commission at this time? Lita Russo?
We had some discussion last night about the scope of the mapmakers agreement with the commission, and I know that we can pass out just a very skeleton draft of this, but I do think that it is important for us to be very clear, at least through a formal motion, that that we want to make sure that these mapmakers are following the Constitution and the Supreme Court's orders. I know there will be a lot of direction and parameters that will be put around them, but I do want to make sure that that is clear. So I would like to formally make a motion that the Ohio Redistricting Commission's independent mapmaking consultants and the Commission's members, permanent staff, follow the Ohio Constitution and orders from the Supreme Court of Ohio State Legislative Redistricting Decisions.
And second.
Discussion.
Secretary LaRose?
Yeah, I guess it kind of goes without saying that the final product that we pass has to abide by the Constitution, but the map makers, I think, shouldn't be necessarily constrained in putting some creative ideas down for us to decide whether we think those are constitutional or not. It feels like this just kind of ties the hands of these folks that are trying to come up with a very difficult solution to a complex problem for us, and why not tell them that those should be the guiding principles but not sort of constrain them? It's up to us to decide what we can accept and vote for.
Sorry, echoing comments I'm hearing from my fellow commissioners down on this end of the table, we already did this. We did this when we agreed to give everybody involved the directions that we were going to follow the Constitution and the opinions of the Supreme Court. So it's I would argue this is moot.
Yeah, and Mr. Co-Chair, I would just add, I think we have to follow the Constitution and as interpreted by the court. So I appreciate what Secretary LaRose is saying, that you know, the problem, one of the problems is that there are decisions to be made that are not in the Constitution and not in the court's orders. There's still discretion that needs to be exercised. There's a whole variety of things. You know, this issue about asymmetry, the court said, well, that's, we don't like that, but they didn't say what else they didn't like. There's not an upper parameter or a lower parameter, things like that. So I think, to Secretary LaRose's point, there are multiple decisions that are not part of these in the Constitution or specified in here that they need to make. But as it relates to this, I think it's true, and I put it in my motion. Is that Saturday night? Saturday night. That this was part point one of my 5-point motion that I made. So,
Mr. Chair, just in quick response, and we can get some clarification certainly, but I'm not sure that the motion at the time addressed our independent map makers that we voted on last evening. So I think it is important to make sure that that direction covers them as well. Also, I will note that the language of this motion does not exclude the ability of both the commission and mapmakers and staff, where appropriate, to use some discretion. But this simply, I think, puts forward in a formal way that's important that we are giving direction not just to our staff and the commission, which I believe what was done in your motion on Saturday, I'm losing track of our days here, but this also extends to the new independent map makers as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I also think it might be helpful for us if there's some additional constraint that needs to be, or clarification, however it is described, that we talk about this with the map makers. I mean, they may get here tomorrow night, and there may be a variety of things that we talk about that they say, well, I wasn't prepared to do that. In fact, when I talked with the map makers that Attorney General Yost suggested in our conversation Sunday afternoon, as we talked about it, they said, well, I'm not going to, what I'm saying, I'm not coming to Ohio, so that made it difficult. So I think I'm not in favor of this motion, at least until we can get some further clarification, and it'd be helpful with the map makers to understand what their parameters are also.
Is there a willingness to withdraw the motion? With the indication that this has been addressed in the previous motion, and that if we need to expound upon it, we can at our next meeting that we have with the map drawers to make clarification.
Mr. Speaker, if we need to hold this until we have that conversation tomorrow, I'm willing to consider that. But again, you know, I would assert that the motion that we put forward on Sunday evening did not cover independent map makers at the time, and that is my concern.
Is it any willingness to approve, to move forward with this motion at this time to make sure it includes the map drawers?
Yeah, can we just wait till tomorrow night?
Wait
till
tomorrow night. Okay. We will wait until tomorrow night.
All right.
Okay. Are there any other items that we need to come before us today?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think for today, but when we meet again, we had discussed how we're going to proceed and what sort of directions we're going to give to the map makers, and so it may be better to hold that, but can think about how we're going to do that. What instructions are we going to give to them in terms of how they proceed, what steps they do? Talked about, you know, just they're presenting a whole map, or are we how they're going to begin their work. So I don't think we can do that now, but I think we do need to think and be ready with some ideas when we talk to the map makers.
It sounds like a homework assignment that
yeah, it does, doesn't
we
it?
Can put
so
on
I
the
see if I, who
first
I can
item
assign
on the
it
next
to.
Agenda. Yeah, first item on the next agenda. There are no further items to be brought before us today. We are adjourned.